The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you're of the opinion that Christians are so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. They're always talking about heaven and hell and what our eternal destiny will be about. They're trying to get everybody saved. They get all freaked out if they think you're not saved. They pray for you. But they don't really do anything to make this world a better place. Well, actually, some Christians get very involved in social issues and the political system. But then when they get too involved, people complain that they're too involved, and they play the separation between church and state card. Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I am by profession a Christian apologist. That's one who makes a reasonable case for belief in God, belief in the Bible. I'm joined today by another Christian apologist, Kevin Conover. Now, he's no stranger to our show. A couple of months ago, I was out of town, and my friend Mike Friedenberg was guest hosting that day, and Kevin was his guest. I'm happy to reintroduce him and to tell you that he's going to be joining our regular lineup. He's going to become one of our permanent rotating co-hosts. So you'll see Kevin on average probably about once a month. Kevin, welcome to our program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bob. Really appreciate you having me on here. And
yeah. Now, since this is only your second time on, why don't you refresh the audience a little bit about what you do? Tell them a little bit about your organization and website.
Sure, absolutely. My website is educateforlife.org. And what I do is I teach high school students about apologetics, basically making a defense for Christianity, answering the real hard questions that come about. How do we be Christians in our society today? What does it mean to be a Christian and be in America here? And I'm also a 11th grade apologetics teacher at Christian High School in El Cajon. And I've been doing this for about 6 years now and loving every minute of it, really enjoying it, and excited to be here.
That sounds like a lot of fun work. And I'm very aware with all the years of campus ministry I did on the college campus that a lot of times churches don't do a very good job of preparing people to go out into the world, into college. So the fact that people at the high school level can hear some Christian apologetics, it's a the way I heard somebody put it one time, we can't shelter people from the world, but we can immunize them. I think you're immunizing them against all the stuff they're going to hear when they get out to the university and hear heresy 401 and blasphemy 308.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I get tons of emails from students who are now going to, you know, different colleges, different universities, and just telling me what their teachers say and in a biology 101 class and being told they have to write a story about how they came up with their beliefs and that the whole semester is on evolution and how evolution's a fact and God's not real or whatever the case might be. And it can be pretty devastating if a kid hasn't been prepared to be able to examine the facts and, you know, take a look at both sides of the argument.
Well, now, one thing that Kevin and I have in common is that we as Christian apologists not only defend the accuracy of Christianity and the intellectual case for Christianity, but we defend Christianity morally. And there are a lot of moral myths about Christianity. One of them is that Christians shouldn't even enter the political scene. As you know, we've been talking about this a lot these last few weeks because there's an election coming up. It is the big elephant in the room. And I was happy to hear that for Kevin's first time as one of our co-hosts, he wanted to talk about these same things. So I'm going to just let Kevin take it away here.
Yeah, you know, something that I've been seeing pop up quite a bit among different people and among Christians, evangelicals in general, is their attitude towards Romney. I was actually in a discussion with a friend of mine on Facebook not too long ago, and he asked me if I was really comfortable voting for a Mormon. And I was kind of surprised that he asked the question, and I said, are you really comfortable voting for Obama? And he said that Obama says he's a Christian and he wants to give Obama the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
Oh, now I'll tell one.
Yeah.
Does he know anything about the church that guy was raised under for 20 years with Reverend Wright, the racism?
Yeah, you know, you would think that...
Obama was claiming that the Gospels were a better part of the Bible than some obscure passage in Romans, referring to the fact that he was promoting gay marriage. He did this even back in 2008.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you go on the web, if you go to wallbuilders.org, there's a full list of all the anti-Christian things that Obama has done. And it's amazing throughout his 4 years. You have to do this on purpose. In February 2009, Obama announces plans to revoke conscience protection for health workers who refuse to participate in medical activities that go against their beliefs, which is basically abortion. In April 2009, when speaking at Georgetown University, Obama orders that a monogram symbolizing Jesus' name be covered while he's making his speech. In May 2009, he declines to host services for the National Prayer Day, which is a federal law at the White House. Also in April 2009, he deliberately disrespected the Vatican. He nominated three pro-abortion ambassadors to the Vatican. And, of course, the pro-life Vatican rejected all three. I mean, you could go on and on and on.
Well, even before 2008, back when he was a state senator, he had a chance to vote for the Illinois Infant Protection Act. This was a law against infanticide, not abortion, and he voted against it. I mean, I would think for a Christian, even if he didn't have communist friends and terrorist friends like Bill Ayers and all these other things, I would think that alone would wake people up. If a man will vote for infanticide, he'll do anything.
Yeah, yeah. And it kind of blows me away that you know, Christians can look at it and say, well, he says he's a Christian and Romney's a Mormon, therefore I got to go with this guy over here with Obama. I mean, we have to go by the way people act, by what they live, by the way they live their lives. Actions speak louder than words. It's just... the Bible's all about that. And in Matthew, there's a scripture that talks about two boys and their father both asked them to go work out in the vineyard. One boy says, I'll do it. And then he doesn't. The other one says one person says, I'll do it. And
he doesn't.
And the other one says, I won't. And he does.
And then later on, he changes his mind. That's good analogy.
Yeah. And Jesus said, which one of them was the righteous one here? Yeah. And it was the one who said, I won't, but actually ended up doing it. And the emphasis there is that, hey, it's about what you do. Talk is cheap, not what you say.
Now, we should be clear, because particularly as Christian apologists, but for any Christian, Kevin and I do not believe in Mormonism. Mormonism teaches theology that is simply not compatible with the Bible. But the president of the United States doesn't have the authority to interfere with the church. Well, he's not supposed to. If anyone's been doing it, Obama has. But if I was going to elect a president or a pastor for my church, I would not elect Mitt Romney. But for president, it simply does not matter. And I always say, who would you rather have? Somebody who believes he's going to become a god someday or somebody who thinks he's already god right now?
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard that one before. Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, after I got through with just giving him all this stuff about Obama and what Obama has been doing over the past 4 years— his response was that actually he's decided, maybe I won't vote at all. And that was not the response I was hoping to get.
But, you know, it's better than some. I'm not a big believer in get out the vote. There are some people who just shouldn't vote.
Yeah.
Maybe he shouldn't. Maybe he should be encouraged to just stay home.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. But what I'd really like to see is, him actually, in James, it says, "He who doesn't know the good he who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it, it's sin." And I think it's a hard place to be, where you see what Obama's done, you see where he's going to go with things, you see the national debt, which in itself is a moral issue. Even Obama himself stated that it was a moral issue.
Before it started happening even more on his watch.
Yeah.
Then he thought, when it was under Bush, it was a moral issue.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a moral issue because, I mean, if you rack up debt and you have no intent to repay, or you're getting to the point where you never will be able to repay and you just continue to rack up debt, I mean, that's a moral issue. I mean, it's basically theft or basically lying. And so absolutely it's a moral issue. And We don't want our country to drown in debt and get into that kind of a position. So I think my encouragement is that if you are considering not voting, I really hope that you reconsider that. I hope our listeners reconsider that.
Unless you're thinking of voting for Obama or Ron Paul or Gary Johnson. In that case, just stay home.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I really like, you know, Billy Graham is out putting out this big campaign right now, which is, hey, vote biblical values. And I think that the answer becomes very clear. If we look at the positions the candidates are taking, we look at the way they have conducted themselves in office, biblical values becomes very clear.
Well, now, Kevin, what do you say to a Christian that says, well, Obama's all about compassion and feeding the poor, and the Bible talks a lot about the poor? So they would argue, maybe they didn't know about the Illinois Infant Protection Act, but they might argue that Obama's the more compassionate person. What would you say to them?
I mean, basically what I would say is, give a person a fish, feed them for a day, teach a person to fish, feed them for life. And that's really the difference. We want to enable people to take responsibility for themselves and to work hard. Now, of course, you know, if there's somebody, my own brother is on permanent disability. I mean, he had a back injury, motorcycle accident. He's on permanent disability. And does he need help? 100% he needs help. And I don't want to take that away from him. And I don't want to take that away from anybody. But as Christians, it's very clear. We're to have compassion and to help those who need the help and those who are just not willing to get the job done. Paul was clear. Hey, he who does not work, he shall not eat.
Yeah. Now, in the book of Acts, we did see a voluntary redistribution of wealth, but people don't get the difference between voluntary redistribution of wealth and mandatory. When the government's just taking it from you, then that goes against another commandment that says thou shalt not steal.
Exactly.
It's not incumbent upon me to go and be generous with somebody else's money. So the commands for the poor are for Christians. We should be helping the poor. But you give that to the government, A, it's being stolen from somebody else, and B, with all the bureaucracy, the poor don't get as much of it as they do when it just goes through the church.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the government is a middleman, and it's very often a corrupted middleman. They're taking so much money out of what is given to them and just wasting it on things rather than giving it to the poor. Contrast that with the Salvation Army, which is something like 97 cents of every dollar goes directly to people's needs. Their overhead is so low, it's amazing. And so that's the difference between, you know, us carrying out God's call on our lives to help the poor versus us saying, hey, you know what? I'm too lazy to get involved. Government, take my money and, you know, go solve my problems. We're supposed to be salt and light. We're not supposed to be like, you know, give away our authority, give away our responsibility to the government, which often just isn't going to do the job.
Okay, I'm here with Kevin Conover, co-hosting the show with me today. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. So you're a Christian. You're thinking of voting for Obama. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to lie down until the feeling goes away. We'll be right back.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Some more beautiful.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Kevin Conover.
Hey, thanks, Bob. You know, something else I think is really important is a lot of times you hear people say, my vote's not going to make that big of a difference. And I looked up a little bit of statistics on past elections and so forth. I thought it was really interesting. In 1960, when the the presidential prize, it says here, was awarded based on an average margin of only one half vote per precinct nationwide.
This was Kennedy Nixon.
That's right, Kennedy Nixon, and one half vote per precinct nationwide. That's amazing. So our vote very much does matter, and you know, you're it's not just the vote for the presidency; it's the vote for all the other seats, the Senate, and your local races too. We need as many people who value biblical principles as possible to be in office and to make a difference in this country.
And now I know some people who would vote for Romney, but they're saying Romney's not going to win in California anyway. So what difference does it make? And the thing is, even though we don't officially go by a popular vote, can you just imagine if a person like Obama, who I don't think will give up the reins easily, can you imagine if he won the popular vote but did not win the Electoral College? We'd have some riots. We'd say he was the trooper. I mean, that happened with Gore and Bush, but that was just Al Gore. Gore didn't have the kind of popularity as Obama. So even in California, it's true, Romney is going to win in California, but the popular vote is important.
It makes it
in California. Oh, I'm sorry. Obama's.
Yeah. You're more...
I meant to say Romney's going to lose in California.
I was
going to
say.
But Californians should still vote. There's a lot of conservatives in California. Romney needs to win the popular vote.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's principle too. It's setting an example. We don't want to be people that give up hope. Nowhere in the Bible does it say give in to fate. You know, I hear a lot of people doomsday, kind of like, you know, it's inevitable. We're going down. We're a sinking ship, and we might as well just give up. You know.
Oh, and then our eschatology makes it but you know, we're living in the last days, and if we have persecution, then we'll have the 7-year tribulation. The Antichrist will come, and then Christ will return. We're not that sure of our facts. Yes, Christ is going to return. We don't know for sure when it's going to be. We may be the last generation. We may not be. If we're not, what kind of land do you want to leave to your children and grandchildren?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at, you know, a lot of people thought Hitler was it. You know, World War II was the end. And if we had had that attitude, oh, I just give up, you know, I would say that's a pretty ungodly attitude just to give in like that and say, you know, God told us to be strong and courageous. You know, he told Joshua, be strong and courageous. So,
and I should say many of the churches did cooperate with Hitler. Hitler was smart enough to not interfere with the church at first. He said, you can have your Sunday morning services. You can have your potlucks, do whatever you want. It was only when the church started protesting the Nazis that they got in trouble. And eventually they had to develop an underground church called the Confessional Church. But the church played ball with Hitler because they thought, well, religious freedom's what's important, not political. It all goes together.
Absolutely. It all goes together. That's what's so exciting has been happening with all the pastors with Pulpit Freedom Sunday and so forth. Yeah. And my friend, you know, he said this to me. As we were continuing this discussion, he said, doesn't Christianity grow under persecution? And
I've got to meet your friend. We got to take him out to Marie Callender's, buy him a piece of pie and have a little intervention here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, hey, you know, Christianity does not always grow under persecution. And not only that, but I'd rather have it grow, you know, without persecution here. In America, we have been blessed to be able to have the freedom to spread Christianity without having to fear for our lives for the most part.
Now, you brought some statistics with you about how Christianity's doing in some countries that are persecuted today.
Yeah, I mean, look at Iran. We've got 0.15% that are Christian. And it's not spreading. You know, they're shutting it down. Same in Iraq, 3% are Christian. North Korea is 4%. Libya is 2%. Turkey, 0.09%. And Turkey considers them a democracy. They consider themselves a democracy. But you can't spread Jesus freely on the streets. You know, that's horrible. That's not spreading. And it's very sad that many people are not given the freedom to hear the gospel. They can't even make a decision to choose Christ because nobody's telling them about Christ. And I'm not saying that, you know, we're close to that point or anything, but I am saying...
We may be.
Yeah.
I don't think we're close to a point where they would outlaw Christianity, but we may start seeing things like, you have to be a politically correct church. You have to be a sensitive church.
Yeah. I mean,
you have to teach gay marriage in your church, those kinds of things.
Yeah. This friend of mine, he said to me that this was kind of the end of our conversation. He said, it doesn't matter to me who's president, because as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord.
Not with a Bible in your hand, you won't, Jack.
Yeah. Yeah. His name wasn't Jack, but, it's crazy to me. I'm thinking to myself, that's not reality, man. I mean, we look around today and we see what's happened with Obamacare. You have nurses who originally were told that if you don't get in line with what we're doing, if you don't begin to administer abortions, you're going to lose your job.
And these are people that go into the medical profession to help people.
Yeah, exactly. You look at Hercules Industries, which in Colorado, they're the first ones that have actually won a lawsuit against the HHS mandate. The Alliance Defending Freedom represented them, and the judge gave them a pause against it. They don't have to comply at this point in time. And they're a Catholic family-run business. And they said, look, we're not going to give up what we believe in order to comply with this. But if we don't, the fines are so severe that we will go out of business. We will not survive.
And good for them for having the courage to do it, because usually the ACLU just scares people and it never even gets to court. But a lot of times when people test the system and take it to court, they're pleasantly surprised with the results.
Exactly, exactly. You know, so I told my friend, listen, you may still serve the Lord, but just like Pastor Youssef in Iran, right, who was recently released after 3 years in prison, and he was going to be executed except for the outcry against Iran.
And wouldn't it have been better for his children to have him at home?
Yeah, I mean, come on. And so we want to keep these freedoms. We don't want to lose these freedoms. You know, there was a bill in Europe not too long ago, came close to passing in Parliament, which would have made it illegal to talk about the negative aspects of homosexuality or Islam. The penalty was going to be a 7-year prison sentence. That's in Europe.
Well, that bill did pass in Canada, and people are trying to pass that bill in the United States. In Canada, the two protected people groups are homosexuals and Islam. In many, you know how many Islamic countries arrest and execute homosexuals? So Canada protected the religion that executes homosexuals in a lot of their countries and the homosexuals.
Yeah.
If not for the insanity of political correctness, who could believe that?
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't know how that's going to end up. That's going to be a weird situation.
We have to watch hate speech and hate crime legislation in America, because under that guise, it's going to get through here, too.
Yeah. You know, and we have to me, we have one of the most oppressive bills that I think has ever passed. Or the most dangerous bills, the biggest, most dangerous precedent set just recently. Our own governor signed into law Senate Bill 1172. It goes into effect on January 1st, 2013, and basically it is that no minor is able to get help with his sexuality. So if let's say he has homosexual feelings and he doesn't want those anymore, it is actually illegal in California starting January 1st for any therapist to actually give him help, any professional therapist. How do you get to the point where the government tells a kid, we know you want help with this, but it is illegal for you to get it?
Well, and the APA tried to disbar people when they were even going to help an adult, not just a minor.
Oh.
Well, G.K. Chesterton, the apologist, once said, when a man stops believing in God, he'll start believing in anything. And we're starting to see that with the insanity of our society. This is Bob Siegel and Kevin Conover. More on Christianity and its relationship to politics when we return. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel and Kevin Conover. We are talking about Christianity and its relationship to politics. Kevin is talking about a friend. We're not giving out his name over the air. We're not those kinds of guys. But his friend who has said that, well, if the only choice is a Mormon or somebody who says he's a Christian and maybe isn't really a Christian, maybe he won't vote. And Kevin has been trying to talk him out of it, and we're trying to, through him, vicariously talk the rest of you in Radio Land out of that idea.
Yeah, so hopefully you're reconsidering here. You know that Obama has refused to defend DOMA, the federal DOMA, and you know we have a Democratic governor here in California who does not hold to biblical values. And so we've seen SB 1172 just pass here, and I wanted to read this little excerpt I got here. It says, 1 year ago, another California story was in the news. The lesbian parents of an 11-year-old boy who is undergoing the process of becoming a girl defended the decision, claiming it was better for a child to have a sex change when young. Thomas Lobel, who now calls himself Tammy, is undergoing controversial hormone-blocking treatment in Berkeley, California, to stop him going through puberty as a boy. At age 7, after threatening mutilation on himself, psychiatrists diagnosed Thomas with gender identity disorder. By the age of 8, he began transitioning. Yes, this is legal in California. While it is now illegal, effective January, for a 17-year-old with unwanted same-sex attractions to receive professional counseling.
So there's a diagnosis of a gender disorder that's clinical, but they won't be able to give that diagnosis starting with 2013 because it will be against the law.
That's exactly to make that right. Yeah.
So a nightmare. And friends, I know it seems politically correct and you're afraid that you're going to sound unloving. You can be loving. Jesus commands us to love everybody. The Bible doesn't tell people to hate gays, but that doesn't mean we have to cater to a viewpoint that's simply not true. Don't we all know deep inside that this is not the way God intended things? Doesn't somebody need to just stand up and say the emperor isn't wearing any clothes?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. But beyond that, it's also just, you know, it's not even, we're to the point where we're advocating, we're taking away a person's freedom. This 7 or 8 year old little boy is being told he can change from a boy to a girl. Okay. And we're all told that no other minor is allowed to even consider trying to be helped with homosexuality. I just think that is just moral chaos to get to this point. Besides the view that homosexuality is not helpful to anybody in general, regardless of that, we're not even there. We're talking about this kid is told by the state you are not allowed to get help even if you want it.
There's a book that everybody should read. It's called After the Ball. It was written by some gay activists in the 1980s. And it was kind of a liberal gay manifesto about how they were going to brainwash the culture and eventually make it against the law to even say that homosexuality is wrong. And that's the problem. People always say, well, live and let live. Okay, well, that sounds good. But when one person's freedom is encroaching on the freedoms of somebody else, and in this case, it's becoming a free speech issue, that's the problem. And that's where it clashes Christianity, not just what the Bible says about the lifestyle, but our freedom of speech.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of people think that our country is a democracy, but our country is actually a democratic republic. And there's a difference between a straight democracy and a democratic republic. Most people are surprised to find out that our founders were actually opposed to pure democracy.
They didn't want the country ruled by a mob.
Exactly, exactly. I have some quotes here. This is John Adams. He said, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide." Pretty powerful statement coming from him. Here's one more that I thought was just a very interesting statement. This is from Fisher Ames, author of The House Language for the First Amendment. He says, "A democracy is a volcano which conceals the fiery materials of its own destruction. These will produce an eruption and carry desolation in their way. The known propensity of a democracy is to licentiousness, which is excessive license, which the ambitious call and the ignorant believe to be liberty." So basically what he's saying here is this. He's saying there are people who think that freedom means I get to do whatever I want, anything goes. But what he's saying here is that that is not freedom at all. In fact, it ends up imploding on itself. It's a volcano.
If you try to please everybody, you end up pleasing nobody sooner or later.
Yeah. And when everybody's free to do whatever they want, they eventually get wrapped into very dangerous situations, you know, whether that's addictions or whatever.
Adolf Hitler was elected originally as Chancellor of Germany through a democracy. It was later on that they turned it into a dictatorship, but he was put in power by a democracy. So was a terrorist organization, Hamas, put into power by the Palestinians through a democracy. So pure democracy, it's not always all it's cracked up to
be. Yeah, and so just to be clear here, the difference between a democratic republic and a pure democracy is this. In a pure democracy, whatever the majority of voters vote is what becomes law. So you can vote for anything. You can vote that Jews are not humans and need to be executed. You can vote that slavery is legal. You can vote anything in that you want as long as you get the majority voted in. The difference between our country and a pure democracy is that there are certain things in our country that you cannot vote on.
Which are guided by the Constitution, which is the heart of it being a republic.
Which are guided by the Constitution. And our Constitution, now I know I could get a lot of flack from atheists on this, but our Constitution is founded on biblical principles.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah. All we have to do is read the diaries of our forefathers. Even the ones who weren't Christians believed Christianity was good for the country.
Exactly. And so the point being here is if you take Christianity out, you take away those moral absolutes that protect everybody. Your right to life, your right to freedom, everything else that's in our Bill of Rights. And so once you begin to take away the Christian foundation, you get to the point where you can do things like what's happened in California, which is it is now illegal for a person, a minor, who wants help. Nobody's forcing them to get help. They want help. It is illegal for them to now get help.
And there we've got to say, where's the compassion of Christ toward this confused minor?
Exactly. Exactly.
I heard a great illustration once of the difference between a republic and a democracy. It was the days of the West. Somebody was out camping and 10 guys rode in and they accused him of having burnt down this barn. Now, he happened to be innocent, but he wasn't able to prove it to them. So they decided to get out a rope on the spot. They were going to hang him and they just took a vote. They said, how many think we should hang him right now? All of a sudden, a sheriff rode in. And he said, you can't hang him. This star that I'm wearing represents the law. Well, they said, 10 of us voted to hang him. He said, that doesn't matter. The law says he has to have a fair trial. That's the difference between a democracy and a republic.
Yeah. Now you can look at Saudi Arabia, and they have a republic, too. They have an Islamic republic.
We can see where it may not look that way.
So the point I'm making is that if it's a Christian republic— hey, that's fantastic. Yes. Why? Because
it'll be based on a good law.
Exactly. But if it's an Islamic republic, you better watch out, because then you've got, a woman's her opinion or her testimony is worth half that as a man. And you've got all kinds of other laws.
Oh, she can be raped and then accused of being out in public without her brother or her husband. And then she's made responsible for being raped.
Yeah, exactly.
That happened in Jordan. Jordan's considered one of the most peaceful of the Muslim countries. So, it's got to be a republic with values behind it. That's what our forefathers believed. Even that some of our forefathers wouldn't pass the litmus test of born-again Christian. Doesn't matter politically. The values were still there. We'll be right back. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Kevin Conover.
Hey, Bob. Well, you know, so what we've been trying to do here is trying to convince Christians, any Christians that are on the fence, that the right vote here is Romney. He is not a Christian, obviously. He's a Mormon. And we don't embrace his teachings, his doctrine, but he sure has his morals on straight. And so what we want to do is just encourage you, don't stay home and not vote. Vote for Romney because he really is espousing biblical values. You know, I recently watched a video by a guy by the name of Bishop Jackson. He is the president of an organization called Stand. And he's basically calling on all Christians to leave the Democratic Party. And he says, you know, the Democratic Party left us a long time ago. And we've really seen that at the Democratic National Convention. He say when they made homosexuality a part of their platform, they officially told us that we are putting secular values ahead of your Christian values. And he said, hey, it's time to leave. We can no longer just stand by when the Democratic Party has fully embraced homosexual marriage and abortion and continue to live this difference here. And so I highly recommend anybody to go to Bishop Jackson's website. It's stand.usa, I believe, or .us. And I just wanted to read you a little bit of what he said here. He said, they say opposition to same-sex marriage is the same as opposition to interracial marriage. That is an insult to human intelligence. It is a lie. No Christian should support this, yet the Democrat Party has now declared same-sex marriage an official part of its platform. And he has a question mark here. And black Christians remain in that party. He put, the civil rights establishment has embraced the lies and betrayed the black community and God Almighty for 30 pieces of silver from the Democrat Party. We as Christians ought to know better. Shame on us for allowing ourselves to be sold to the highest bidder. We belong to God. Our ancestors were sold against their will centuries ago, but we're going to the slave market voluntarily today. Yes, it's just that ugly. I cannot recommend his speech more highly. It's just amazing. You can actually go to my website too, educateforlife.org. It's posted there on my blog. If you'd like to watch his speech, it's very inspiring. And anybody who's on the fence should watch that video and just listen to what he has to say.
Okay, well, we have a phone call, and it says Marissa, his wife. Well, I don't have a wife, so I'm assuming that has to be your wife, Kevin.
Yeah.
Marissa, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Hi there. I had a question, but I'm posing as someone who's not a Christian. I'm wondering, okay, so when the whole Chick-fil-A thing happened, I don't know if you guys have time to talk about this, but I saw a lot of signs and bumper stickers around the area that said, hate is not a family value, and you guys were talking about values. So what about people that clash with biblical values or they don't agree with biblical values? What do you say to people like that? And that's just to throw out there. You can talk about it whenever.
Wow, okay. that is a brilliant question. You sound like just the smartest woman ever.
She sounds like somebody that you ought to nail down here,
yeah,
Kevin.
That's what
She's got her head set squarely on her shoulders.
Yeah, I think I'll ask her on a date. You want to go on a date after this?
Sounds great.
I think you guys are going to need a babysitter before you have a date.
It's already set up.
Okay. Well, you know, it is an excellent question, Marissa, because the assumption that we can't disagree with somebody without that being equated with hate. When I talk to people that bring up this subject, I say, well, you and I obviously have a difference of opinion. I think homosexuality is a lifestyle that's not natural. You do. Okay, I disagree with that. I can respect you. Do you hate me? They usually will not say that they hate a Christian for feeling that way. So why are we accused of hate just for disagreeing with them?
Right. That's really good.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
It could get real deep, but I just wanted to know if maybe you guys could talk about the reasons why Christians, you know, think that homosexuality is not a biblical way to live and why would God, you know, say that? So I'm going to hang up and you guys could talk about it.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I like, someone that hangs up and lets us talk. Kevin and I never get a chance to talk.
Yeah.
Marissa, nice to meet you, if only over the phone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, son.
What would you say to that, Kevin, if someone says, well, why is it? I mean, obviously we could quote a verse, but I think God has reasons
for
his commandment. I think we need to give people the reasons and not just quote scripture.
Yeah, the Bible, God is a very rational God. He doesn't have any expectations without a reason. He always has a reason for what he does and what he says. And, the reality is that the homosexual lifestyle, generally speaking, especially men, is potentially harmful to a person's life. And, I don't hear this said too much on the radio. So, the Red Cross will not allow male homosexuals to donate blood. Okay. And most people don't know this, but if you were to go to the Red Cross's website today, you can look it up and it will tell you that a man who has had sex with another man is not allowed to donate blood.
It's because of the HIV.
Exactly.
Virus.
It's because it's one of the questions on the survey that they give out. And the reason that that is because the HIV prevalence is so high among male homosexuals that it's just too dangerous. It could potentially contaminate the blood supply. And just to tell you how dangerous it is, studies have shown that although homosexual men only make up approximately 1-2% of the total population, they actually comprise 60% of all new HIV cases. And this is astounding. It's very, very just mind-boggling.
Well, and it's not just physical harm. There's such a thing as psychological harm. Prior to the year 1973, there were all kinds of case studies where gay people were treated successfully. We have a whole Christian ministry called Exodus Ministries with all kinds of testimonies like that. In 1973, the APA declassified homosexuality as a mental disorder, emotional disorder, and a lot of people don't understand that that was due to political pressure from gay activist psychologists. It wasn't because of any scholarly study, and people felt so pressured, the ballot was done in secret. Two-thirds of the ballot were never even sent back in. Of the one-third that was sent in by a small margin, homosexuality was declassified. Now, these are little stubborn, unpolitically correct facts that we're not going to hear at our universities
today.
That's
right, yeah. And I could go through a bunch of stuff here that's very politically incorrect. The main doctor who got homosexuality removed from the APA's DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, is Robert Spitzer. And at the time, his attitude was homosexuals cannot change. But he's actually come out now in recent years. He did a whole new study, and he has completely changed his mind.
Well, and the woman who was the person in Roe versus Wade, McCorvey, she's come out and changed her mind for the Roe versus Wade thing, and now she's against abortion. Isn't it interesting that the people that start these things, they see the light? Meanwhile, there's this movement that's begun that just takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to repeat that guy's name. If you want to look him up, Robert Spitzer. Has changed his mind and said, and he's not a Christian. He's the top, he's considered the world expert on this issue. And he has said homosexuals can change to heterosexuality.
And there are many cases I've had on my show, Ann Polk, who's one of the 100 leading experts on homosexuality in the world, turned from a gay lifestyle, is married to a person that used to be gay. It happens, but you're not going to read about that in the New York Times. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Kevin Conover. Kevin, we're down to our last segments, which means we'll probably be right in the middle of something when it's time to sign off. So let me tell you at this time that it's been great having you on the show. Welcome. I'm sure the audience is going to enjoy getting used to you. You're doing a great job, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob. I'm having a really good time, and love talking about this stuff. I think it's so important. You know, if there's anybody out there, especially high school students, if you are interested in potentially taking a class where we get into some real serious depth on these issues, you can go to my website, educateforlife.org. That's educateforlife.org or kevinconover.com. And you can actually sign up for a class. Love to have you. Our next semester starts in January, and we offer a bunch of different classes on world religions, who's right, how do you know, created or evolved, you know, did we come here by an accident or were we created on purpose? We have another one on separation of church and state, you know, homosexuality, abortion. We talk about all these tough issues to get kids really grounded. We have a bunch of testimonials on the site, too, that just are kids testifying to how the class has blessed them and really helped them to answer some difficult questions.
Speaking of separation between church and state, why don't you address that for a few minutes? Because that's another one of these myths. Those words aren't even found in our Constitution, but there is an Establishment Clause, and I don't think people understand what the Establishment Clause was really all about.
Sure. Well, the Establishment Clause is in the First Amendment, and basically it says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And the point was, the Founding Fathers, what they were trying to get across was, we don't want the federal government telling anybody what religion they have to be. And of course, they had come over from England, and this is what happened to them there, and they wanted to make sure that was not the case here. Now, Thomas Jefferson, interesting enough, when the First Amendment was written, he actually was not even in the U.S. He was over in France.
And there were Adams were both in France.
That's right. And, yeah. And there were 90 founding fathers who framed the First Amendment. They have all of the records, all the dialogue that was taken during that time, not a single reference to separation of church and state. In fact, there is not a single founding document that has the phrase separation of church and state in it. All it has, that came from Thomas Jefferson's letter written to the Danbury Baptists.
And it was to assure the Danbury Baptists that the government would not interfere with them anyway. That's when you use that term.
That's exactly right. His whole goal was, we're not going to tell you what religion to be. And so, you know, when we talk about the cross on Mount Soledad, there is no problem from a founding father's perspective on that cross being up there. Now, today we have court cases that judges and lawyers use to say that cross can't be up there. But if you had a time machine and you were to bring George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or John Adams, and they saw that cross and you said, hey, should that cross come down because it's on government property? They would have been like, what are you talking about?
And how does it hurt somebody?
Yeah.
I mean, I was raised as a Jewish atheist, not a religious Jew, but I grew up not believing in Jesus, not believing in the manger. I didn't care if someone was wearing a cross. So I've really seen this from both sides. How does it hurt? Could our forefathers have been smart enough to know that if you don't like the cross, you just look the other way?
Yeah.
And you know, save the taxpayers all these court trials?
You know what's crazy is many atheists don't realize this, but when they try to get that cross down, they're actually shooting themselves in the foot, because something has to fill the vacuum if you take Christianity out of America. It's not like it just stays a perfect country. It doesn't work like that. Okay, Europe is doing that. Europe is taking Christianity out of their government. England is doing that. And it's being replaced. Okay, it's being replaced by a secular, moral, relativistic culture along with Islam. Okay, this is not something anybody should want, not something somebody, an atheist, should want. No Muslim should want it. No Jewish person should want it. No Christian should want it. Nobody should want it. The reason this country is so great is that Christian moral values, Jesus Christ was not into forcing people to follow him. He doesn't say, I'll break down the door of your heart and come in and eat with you. He doesn't say that. He says, I will knock at the door of your heart. If anyone hears my voice and invites me in, I will come in and eat with him and he with me. He is not into making people. And that's what this country is so great, is that you get to choose what you want to be. But if you remove that foundation, if you remove that freedom of choice, you end up with something else. And that's what we're getting. When California tells minors they are not allowed to get help if they want it, that is not the Christian position. when you start telling people what they can and can't do like that.
And all the talk about freedom, but it is our freedom that we're losing in the name of freedom. That's what's so sad about it.
That's right. It's so ironic. It's so weird. But basically, if we remove our Christian base, we will lose our freedoms. There's just no way around it.
Well, George Washington tried to warn us to that effect before he left office.
Yeah.
He said the day that we stop praying to God is going to be the day that this country moves on decline.
Yeah, as did Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson said, hey, if we lose our Christianity, it's all over. This country won't survive with the amount of freedom and blessing it has if we lose that. Because Christianity gives you freedom. That's what it does.
Yeah, and a lot of people like to say, well, Jefferson and Franklin were deists. Well, first of all, what a deist was in those days and what a deist is today are two different things. But again, they probably wouldn't understand born-again Christian as we do, but they did believe that the values were good for the country. And we have Jason on the line with a question. Jason, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with Kevin Conover.
Hi. Maybe it's not just a general question, but it's kind of, you know, I just tuned in, so I don't know the extent of what you've been talking about. But as far as this, you know, you've been talking about Christianity is kind of the key to our success and everything like that.
Well, Christian values, not forcing everybody to become a Christian. So we want to make that distinction.
Okay, well, isn't it inherent within Christianity that if people do not become Christians, then they're like going to hell? And I mean, it seems that a lot of people that have this that point of view kind of overlook one of the main strongholds in the religion. And don't you think that itself is not only making it something that you argue against in other religions, but kind of makes it if you're saying Christianity does not force other people to become Christians.
Okay, you're asking a good question.
But if you're not a Christian, you're going to hell.
Okay, Jason, you're asking a good question, and just because we're running out of time, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we're down to our last few minutes. It is true that between a person and God, there is an eternal destiny. It is not true that anywhere Jesus tells us to go out and force people to become Christians. Now, the Quran does tell Muslims to force people to become Muslims. Kevin wanted to comment on that, too.
So basically, if we contrast this with Islam, there's a big difference here. You have Christianity, which tells the Christian believers, hey, listen, go out and tell people about Jesus Christ because they need to be saved from hell. And that's very motivating. On the other hand, you have the Quran, which says that Islam literally must dominate the world. Now Christians can live under Islam, but they have to pay additional taxes, as do Jews. But even then, you are a second-class citizen. As far as Christianity in America, nobody's a second-class citizen. And although I do believe that if a person doesn't know Christ as their Savior, they're heading in the wrong direction. I'm not going to hold a gun to their head and say, hey, convert or die, or, you know, pay additional taxes or anything like that. I'm only going to persuade them through my arguments.
We only have a couple of minutes left. Go ahead and respond for a moment, Jason.
Sure, I understand that. I guess what I'm referring to is not in the world, not in our world of man, because really when it comes down to it, what matters is the world of, you know, of what happens after you die. And, you know, if different taxes are imposed while we're here on Earth or whatever happens here on Earth, it's kind of another conversation and not even really, relevant to what we're talking about. Because when it comes down to it, no matter if you're trying to persuade people to join your religion, or if you are, if you or not, when it comes down to it, all of those religions are the same in saying that if you don't believe in our God, you're going to hell.
Okay, Jason, do me a favor. If you'd like to, give me a call next week. I'd like to talk with you more about this. I can only say at this point that part of the gospel is not only offering people forgiveness from sins for the sins they've committed, but deliverance from sins committed against them. So we need to speak out against evil. We need to preserve freedom. That's part of the gospel, too. You got just a few seconds, Kevin, if you wanted to say a little more here.
I'd just like to say thanks a lot, Bob, for having me on. If you have any other questions, feel free to email me on my website, educateforlife.org. I'd love to talk to you and help you out.
Okay. And I will see you next week, everybody. Remember, if you feel like voting for Obama, lie down until the feeling goes away.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.